indicate such games as chasing one another and building bridges. Another pastime would occur at noon while Krishna was taking rest. Nearby, the young cowherd girls would be passing by singing, and Krishna's boyfriends would pretend to inquire from them about the price of milk. So, pastime takes place quite often in Vrindavan, where the gopis are going from the village to the market to sell milk products, and Krishna and the cowherd boys would accost them and demand, sometimes they demand a tax, sometimes they just want to harass them. In one particular pastime, they actually smash their pots of milk and butter, and then the gopis take revenge the next day by tying up Krishna and beating him with flowers until he apologizes. So like this, this lila of, Adam, why don't you come a little closer? We won't bite, I promise. We're vegetarians. And it's such a small group that we can all sit a little close to each other, so I can also see you. Come a little closer. And that way, yeah, it's nice. It's a little more intimate. Yeah, so then, so this pastime of stealing butter or harassing the gopis on their way to selling the butter would take place in many different variations in Vrindavan. So then it says, then the boys would steal yogurt and other items from them and run away. Krishna and Balaram and their friends would also play games in which they would cross the river in boats. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur further explains that the boys would play with fruits by throwing a few in the air and then throwing others to hit them. Right, just like, at least when, as boys, you know, you would often play this game where you would throw like a ball in the air and take a stick and hit it and smack it, you know. So you have cricket, baseball. This is the origination of cricket and baseball, I guess, throwing fruits in the air and hitting them. The word netra bandha indicates a game in which one boy would approach a blindfolded boy from behind and place his palms over the blindfolded boy's eyes. Then simply by the feel of his palms, the blindfolded boy would have to guess who the other boy was. In all such games, the boys would put up stakes for the winner, such as flutes or walking sticks. That's really nice. That's really sweet. Sometimes the boys would imitate the various fighting methods of the forest animals, and at other times they would chirp like birds. Om Gyanatitimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Namo Maha Vatanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauro Tvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagat Pate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpatribhyascha, Kripasindubhyevacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. Good morning, everyone. You're both new to the temple, so I just wanted to welcome you and say Hare Krishna. My name is Hari Shyam, by the way. You are? Alexis? And Mataji? Mataji, yourself? Okay. Your husband's here, no? For work? Okay, great. Welcome to Chicago. So today's the appearance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But we're also reading a very beautiful verse from the Bhagavatam. So I thought what I would do to small groups so we can do this is I would read some excerpts from a biography of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, just a few paragraphs, and share a little bit of my own personal appreciation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and yeah, read a few things written by him, written about him. And then if there's a little bit of time, then I was going to read for everyone the Dhanakeli Chintamani, the pastime of the cowherd boys trying to tax the gopis near Govardhan on the day when Vasudev and Devaki organized the big yagya in Braj for the protection of Lord Balaram and Krishna. So they organized this big yagya, and for that yagya, a lot of butter and milk was required. So on that, and so the gopis were ordered, like, please bring your best butter and milk for the sacrifice. So they were on their way to the yajna by Govardhan. When, you know, have you been to Govardhan? You've been to Govardhan? Okay, one day. And there's a place called Danghati. It's called Danghati, right by the entrance of Govardhan. And this is where this pastime unfolds, where the gopis are coming with all their buttermilk and yogurt, and the cowherd boys harass them and stop them and try to tax them. And it's very beautiful pastime. There's so much, like, amazing little details that Srila Raghunath Das Goswami wrote this book called Dana Keli Chintamani, in which he describes in detail the emotions of Radharani, the emotions of the gopis as they see Krishna, as the gopas see the gopis. It's very beautiful. So since Prabhupada already, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada already mentioned this pastime in the purport, so then I thought we would end with a little reading of the pastime. It's kind of a big book, so we won't get through much of it, but at least we'll get a little flavor of what the pastime is all about. So, but we'll begin with just a little talk on Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So I thought before we do that, we could just all chant his pranam mantra together. And I don't remember it by heart. I remember the first line, so I just want to pull it up so we don't make any mistakes. It is, you don't want to mispronounce his pranam mantra. That doesn't seem auspicious. Okay. Yeah. Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Satchidananda Bhakti Vinod, who is the transcendental energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's a strict follower of the Goswamis, headed by Srila Rupa Goswami. So a lot of the biographical details of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life are things you might have already heard quite a lot about, being in ISKCON. And so I don't want to go over, like, dates and times and places like that. I would like to highlight two things that I've always appreciated very much about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was a grihastha, he was a magistrate, he had over 8 kids. And in spite of having a very, very serious position and a very large family, Bhaktivinoda Thakur took the trouble to write over 100 books and various song books. Actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that if all the philosophy of this world would disappear, if all the philosophical books of our tradition would disappear, then song books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur are fully sufficient to reestablish the truths of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Because in these songbooks like Gitavali and Sharanagati and Bhaktamala, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining the philosophy of Krishna consciousness through songs. The entire Shikshastakam has been translated into songs. The philosophy of, you know, becoming freed from the illusions of the material energy, what is the material energy? All of this Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in great detail. How to aspire for pure devotional service, what is pure devotional service? All of this is explained in the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So that's why Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, if all the philosophical books of this world should disappear, as long as the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur are present, especially Sharanagati. It's an amazing songbook describing the 6 angas of Sharanagati, the 6 limbs of surrender. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes 6 songs for each, 5 to 6 songs for each limb of surrender. And studying these songs, one can understand what does it really mean to practice Krishna consciousness. So he wrote these amazing books like Jaiva Dharma, like the songs book Chaitanya Shikshamrita. And I'll read a little passage from a glorification of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that helps us appreciate at a deeper level why he wrote these books. It's really nice. So it says here, Thakur Bhaktivinoda was indefatigable, which means undefeatable or very determined, in the practice of Shuddha Sanatan Dharma, pure Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan means eternal, Dharma means the nature of. So Shuddha Sanatan Dharma means the pure eternal nature of the soul. Taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and was no strenuously occupied in the work of the restoration of the worship of God at holy sites. So I'll read later a little passage which talks about how Bhaktivinoda Thakur re-established Navadvip, and he also discovered the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So these are some of the contributions of his. He was strenuously occupied in the work of restoration of the worship of God at holy sites and the establishment of congregational and individual religious life in the country. So we're all aware of the Namahatta program, right? Where devotees get together, bhakti vrikshas, devotees get together in their houses and hear and chant together and discuss, right? We have these bhakti vrikshas. Bhakti Vinod Thakur was the founder of the bhakti vriksha model in Bengal. He had established over 1,000 bhakti vrikshas in villages, and the villagers would gather together and, you know, sing songs of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Sometimes they're simple people. They didn't have, in those days, you don't have internet, you don't have thousands of copies of Prabhupada's books everywhere. So they just had maybe some song books. They would do some kirtan. Maybe somebody would tell a little story from the Bhagavatam, something, you know. It wasn't that everyone had access to books and everyone had access to this information. So, but what he did was he created these little sanghas so that even in villages where there were no temples or association of devotees, people would come together and hear and chant together about Krishna, which is the essence of bhakti. But at the same time, he was aware that his mission was also to expound to the whole world the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which had been and is still misunderstood by people in this country and elsewhere. So this is one of my personal, you could say, inspirations about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Although he lived over 100 years ago, when you read his writings, they sound very, very contemporary. And they seem very, very practically relevant and applicable. Like, for example, there's a book called the Mana Shiksha, which is Roganath Das Goswami's 11 Instructions to One's Mind. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes a commentary to that book. And it's a very, very esoteric set of prayers, praying for like pure devotional service in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. But what Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary gives us access into how we can apply these things in our own practical personal life as individuals who have to go to work and have families or whatever busy things we may be doing, or people coming from a Western background. That's what's so interesting about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writing, is that he doesn't write, at least I don't get the sense that he's writing for like the people of his times. I literally feel when you read his books that he's writing for us. He's writing for people today with our doubts about, you know, with science and atheism and different religious conceptions. So this is what makes Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writing so practically relevant. And for me, as somebody who likes the idea of being able to communicate ideas, right? It's so exciting to read his works because you can see how over 100 years ago, with his cultural background, he was able to communicate Gaudiya Vaishnavism to a contemporary audience with such clarity and force. That's quite remarkable, you know, to be able to communicate these ideas to a generation that's going to come over 100 years later and do it so convincingly. I really appreciate that about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He found that the people had practically no knowledge of the monumental works of the associates and the most illustrious followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This was the case in Bengal over 100 years ago. People had no idea who Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was. Or when it says the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it means the Goswamis. People weren't aware of books like Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or Gopal Champu by Jiva Goswami, or the Sandarbhas by Srila Jiva Goswami. So there are so many books that the Goswamis had written, the works of Raghunath Das Goswami. It was Bhaktivinoda Thakur who reinitiated this distribution of the Goswami literature, which is, if you think about it, it's quite remarkable because, you know, our whole Krishna consciousness, our tradition, is based on the Bhagavatam and Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which were explained scientifically by the Goswamis in their books. So if those books hadn't become available to the public at large, right, hadn't become available to us, a huge chunk of how we practice Krishna consciousness would basically be missing. So what an amazing contribution to our spiritual life that he revived the publication and distribution of these works. What he would do is he had a newspaper called Sajjana Toshini. So back in those days, newspapers weren't only about publishing news. He would publish translations of the Goswami literatures in like little chapters, like one chapter of this book, of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu this month or this week, and another chapter next week. So that way people were getting the books of the Goswamis in like little packages. The very existence of many of those works was unknown. So again, the very existence of many of the Goswami literatures was unknown. Those who gave themselves out to be followers of Mahaprabhu mistook ignorance of the scriptures for devotion and selfish enjoyment for love of God. So this is another thing. In those days, you had a class of people who didn't base their spiritual practice on any kind of philosophical basis. So for them, you know, studying, Prabhupada criticizes this in his purports all the time. For them, studying books was considered dry, speculative knowledge, you know, and practicing pure devotional service was basically, for them, you know, selfishly enjoying in the position of Krishna and, you know, having illicit affairs with people of the opposite sex and things like that, because bhakti is all about feeling. It's all about feeling, you know. So that mentality can sometimes be seen even today, where we may not practice the principles of Krishna consciousness and just reduce it to the point of saying, well, it's all about the feeling, Prabhu. It's all about the feeling. What we don't realize is that if we don't control our mind and our senses, then our feeling is not for Krishna. Our feeling is for sense objects, and we're deluding ourselves. You know, so this Bhaktivinoda Thakur also corrected, and he rectified this understanding. Then it goes on to say, the educated people had very little practice of religion in any form. Here's another wonderful contribution of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is that he was very much attracted to preaching to the educated masses in society. This was also Prabhupada's great interest. He wanted to preach to those who were educated, who were elevated in society. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because he himself was very educated and elevated, he would mingle in social circles where the upper echelon of society would go. And for their benefit, actually, he, in some of his books, in some of his writings, he would compare Christianity to our Hindu philosophy. But he would do it in a very academic way. And he was doing it particularly to attract these elevated people in society who thought that Hinduism and worship of gods was idol worship and was sentimentalism and was basically demoniac. Because what had happened was, and this is very interesting, the British did this very systematically, and I'm sure Mother Krishna Ashram knows the history of this because she's so well learned. But the British, when they came to India, they realized that if we want to break and control these people, we have to break their convictions in their gods. We have to shake up their religious roots, their religious foundation. So they started creating, the British academic scholars would write books criticizing Hinduism and basically saying that this is a very animalistic and backward religious tradition. So what happened was, and then at the same time, the British, I read this actually, they had a strategy that will elevate a few people amongst these Indians to be like us. They will be Indian, but they will be British in their dress, in their thinking, in their language, and their culture. We'll teach them English, we'll invite them to our parties, we'll teach them how to eat like us and dress like us. And then guess what? They will start believing in what we believe in, so they will start believing in their religious tradition and their roots. And seeing them, the thousands and millions of other Indians will think, this is what it means to be successful and elevated in society, so we should also be like them. So basically there was this bias amongst cultured and educated Indians that, you know, our religious roots, our religious traditions, this is backwards. You know, this is very old-fashioned, and it's not scientifically reasonable. So this kind of heavy bias from the educated class of society was something also that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was fighting through his writings. And in fact, he was friends with some of these people. For example, there is a famous Indian academic. His name was Rabindranath Tagore, who was the first winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature. He wrote the Indian National Anthem. They were close friends. They were part of the same social circle. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur would often be around these kind of upper-class people and write these books to try to teach these educated people that, hey, look, you know, our Hindu tradition, our religious tradition is not backwards. It's actually quite advanced. It's very sophisticated. And when compared to Christianity, this was one of his contributions, he showed how in Christianity, the idea of God goes only as far as God the Father, God the Provider. But the idea in Gaudiya Vaishnavism is God can become the lover. He's the ultimate object of service. So he made that comparison to show people that, look, in Christianity, you're only going so far in your theistic conception of Godhood. But in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, it goes so much higher, so much deeper. And he did it without disrespecting the Christians. You know, he did it in a nice way. So carrying on here, it says, the mass, and especially women, were addicted to smartha ritualistic practices, the object of which was the attainment of selfish enjoyments. So again, the author is pointing out that in the times of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there was a lot of religiosity, doing rituals for the sake of attaining material fruits, but not really the essence of bhakti, which was trying to please and serve God. So this was something else that he had to fight. The pundits were mostly either supporters of such fruitive ceremonies or believers in an abstract form of God devoid of all spiritual pastimes. This latter, so the pundits were either supporting these ritualistic ceremonies or they believed in an impersonal idea of God. This latter being the bequest of godless Buddhism and the teachings of Shankaracharya, right? So through the tradition of Buddhism and the work of Shankaracharya, a lot of Hindus had come to accept the impersonal form of God. And this last one is a bit technical, we'll break it down. Skepticism amongst the educated classes, coupled with the prevalence of polytheistic or neutralistic attitudes, were prevalent. So what does that mean? It means that the educated classes were they had a lot of doubts about Hindu religion. And along with their doubts was this idea of polytheism, that actually all gods are equally relevant. It's not just Krishna as the supreme deity, but all gods are equally relevant. It's all one, you know, so we don't have to worship an exclusive deity. Or neutralistic, that, okay, some people do it, you know, some people like it, some people don't like it. For me, I don't care. So apathy, polytheism, impersonalism, scientific doubts, cultural brainwashing by the British, smarter rituals and practices, a lack of awareness of the teachings of the Goswamis, so much misunderstanding in the atmosphere Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to try to combat. You can understand now why he prayed to have a son who would be like a ray of Vishnu, because he wanted a powerful acharya to appear in this country and smash a lot of these things, which is why Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he did that. He did that service that his father intended for him to do before he was even born, to establish Gaudiya Vaishnava Dharma and smash a lot of these misunderstandings by his heavy preaching work. So then, here's a little, one more paragraph about the writings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Quote, himself practicing the Dharma, Lord Sri Chaitanya teaches jivas that if one does not practice Dharma himself, he cannot teach it to others. This is a quote from the CC. The career of Mahaprabhu embodying the teachings of all the scriptures was the subject that Bhaktivinoda Thakur placed before the people of Bengal in clear and simple language and with a wealth of reaming and depth of spiritual insight that make his numerous works a part and parcel of the scriptures of all countries. Explaining in minute detail and in unambiguous language the only true religion of all jivas. What a beautiful statement. So I'll read that again. I'll read parts of it again. So what it says here is that Thakur Bhaktivinoda placed before the people of Bengal in clear and simple language spiritual insights that make his work a part and parcel of the scriptures of all countries. In other words, they have universal value. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his books is showing, it's very interesting if you read this book called Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita. And the way Bhaktivinoda Thakur opens the book, he talks about theism and atheism and morality and immorality. How there is a morality that's coupled with theism, so belief in God. So you believe in God and you're a moral person. Then there is a morality that's coupled with atheism. So you don't believe in God, but you're still a moral person, right? And then there's an immorality that's coupled with belief in God. You believe in God, but you're still God and cheat everybody. And then there's an immorality that's coupled with atheism, so you don't believe in God and you're not a good person. So with that categorization, he basically summarized all categories of human beings on the planet. You have good people and you have immoral people, right? And some good people believe in God, some good people don't believe in God. So what I'm trying to show is that he created this language and this way of categorizing human beings that anybody from any religious tradition, right, especially like you're into interfaith, they read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books, they'll be able to connect with that because they'll understand, oh, these principles are universal. This apply all over the globe. In fact, in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur even explains why there's such a variety of religions on the planet. You know, and he does it very well. He says we're all worshiping that one essential truth, but because of differences in geography, culture, language, practices, different practices emerge in different parts of the world because we have access to different cultural traditions, different languages, different things like that. But, you know, it's so interesting to me, like when you go out sometimes, and it's Bhaktivinoda Thakur whose writings really helped me understand this. You see, you know, the Muslims, they're very fanatical about wearing that hat, having a beard, right? This is like a core practice for them, you know? And then, you know, we'll go out, we'll have our tilak, and we'll have maybe our bed sheets or something, you know? And then you'll see the Sikhs, and the Sikhs have the little knife, they have their beards, they have their head turbans. So, you know, if an alien came to Earth and he would see us all walking around with our different rituals, he would be a little amused, you know, like, why do you Vaishnava shave your face in the name of God? And why do you Sikhs don't shave your face in the name of God? You know, like why? You know, and then why do you sacrifice human beings in the name of God? And why do you not eat onion and garlic in the name of God? You know, it's like an alien would be completely like confused. Like, what are you people? You know, are you all doing the same? And you're all worshiping the same truth? Like, I'm confused, you know? So that's, you know, and it's true. Like, we do such a variety of things on the planet in the name of worshiping God, you know, but it takes somebody with a very broad vision and elevated consciousness like Bhaktivinoda Thakur to help us see that, okay, you know. And then he writes in Chaitanya Shikshamrita that when you go to a temple or a mosque or a church that is not of your tradition, then one should think, oh, here my Lord is being worshipped, but in their way, you know. Here my Lord is being worshipped, but in their way. What a beautiful sentiment, right, Keshava Kishore? Here my Lord is being worshipped, but in their way. And in that way, we appreciate their way of appreciating God, you know. So that makes his literature very universal. And then the author also explains that in those books, he would explain the true religion of all jivas. So this is, of course, if you read any of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books, you would get that in great clarity. Am I speaking too fast? I get that feedback a lot. It's okay. Okay. We'll read one more paragraph now from this biography, which is cool. Is this interesting? People like hearing about Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Yeah? Okay. Okay, so here's another section from the offering. While at Krishnanagar one night, thinking deeply on the site of birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, on the roof of his residence in Navadvip, he is said to have seen in a vision a luminous building towards the northeast. He was filled with wonder. The next morning, he asked for the particulars of that place from which the vision had appeared to him. He was told that the ruins of the Balal's palace are to be found there. He went to the place with such topographical accounts, old maps, and other data as he could gather for his investigations. So, you know, we go to the holy places, like we go to Mayapur, and we just show up and we tell the taxiwala, take me to, you know, Janmasthan, the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Take me there. And there's a sign and everything is just, it's so easy, you know, for us to come to these holy places and find these holy sites, right? But at one point, this was all jungle, you know, ravines, rivers, swamps. And people like him, you know, showing up with like old accounts, maps, you know, like village gossip, like, you know, this, that, trying to determine, these are the holy sites of Mahaprabhu's pastimes. These are the holy sites of Krishna's pastimes. So cutting edge, right, for his time. So it says, so he would arrive with topographical accounts, old maps, and other data as he could gather for his investigations. On inquiry, he learned from the local people that it was the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They pointed out an extensive mound covered with tulsi plants as the actual site of the house of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They added that they used to point out from generation, I think there's a typo here, they used to point out from generation to generation. I don't know what that means. It was a blissful moment when Bhaktivinoda Thakur realized that he had at last succeeded in his attempt, which had cost him so much anxiety. Thakur Bhaktivinoda then composed his famous Navadvip Dham Mahatmya in praise of every place within the circle of Navadvip. It was published in the same year. It's also described that to confirm, it wasn't just topographical accounts, to confirm that this was the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Bhaktivinoda Thakur invited his guru, Jagannath Das Babaji, who was very old and over 100 years old at the time. He used to live in his disciple's servant would carry him in a basket everywhere because he couldn't even walk. And in fact, it's described that he was so old that his servant would have to hold up his eyelids so he could see, you know, because his muscles were so weak. And when they brought him to this place, he jumped up from his basket, jumped up, 100-year-old person who couldn't even walk, and started chanting loudly, this is it, the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is it. So it was confirmed, not just by geography and local gossip, but also the heart of a pure Vaishnav. So like that, yeah, the glories of Bhaktivinoda Thakur are endless. He did so much to organize and present Krishna consciousness to the people of his times, printing presses, newspapers. He was the founder of the Vishva Vaishnav Raj Sabha. He wanted to bring together Vaishnavas from different groups and different parts of Bengal and Odisha into one collective so they could discuss Krishna consciousness and how to spread Krishna consciousness and matters that were relevant. So he was an organizer, he was a preacher, he was a father, a magistrate, an author, a guru. He had many, many disciples. He gave the father of Bhakti, you know, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. I mean, so many accomplishments that, you know, I think even if Ananta would speak for 1,000 years with all of his mouths, we wouldn't be able to properly glorify Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So I thought I would read then just one little more thing from, I love reading things, sorry, so if it's a little boring, but we'll explain as we go along. So this is something he wrote right almost at the end of his life. It's called the Swanyama Dashakam, 12 verses of my own self-imposed regulative principles. And the reason why I want to read a little bit of this is these are principles that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote for his own spiritual life, his own spiritual practice. And I'm a firm believer in the idea that we need to have a vision for our spiritual life. You know, just like if you want to start a business, then you have to write down, I hope that my business will do this and will sell this kind of product to make this kind of person very happy in this kind of market for this kind of price range, right? Anybody who has a job knows that if you want to make a successful business, you have to identify, what are you selling? Who are you selling it to? Why are you selling it to them, right? You have to write these things down. So I feel that also in spiritual life, we need to have our own personal mission statement. What are the things that are valuable to me in my spiritual practice? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave us an example of that by his 12 self-imposed regulative principles. It's kind of long, so I'm not going to read all of it, obviously, because it's a lot to hear. But we'll just read two or three just to get a sense of how he conceived of his own spiritual practice. So we'll read the first one. He says, no matter whenever and wherever I happen to take birth, let my loving affection and attachment remain unshaken throughout each and every lifetime for the following things. Unshakable attachment for the following things. What? For my divine spiritual master, for Sri Gauranga, for the detailed topics of pure devotional service and the methods of its execution as personally instructed by him, by Sri Gauranga. For the holy places of pilgrimage like Sri Navadvip, Sri Vrindavan, which are all blooming with divine sanctity due to his performance of wonderful pastimes there. And so he wants attachment for the holy dham. For the Diksha mantra bestowed upon me by the divine grace of my spiritual master, right? So we get the Hare Krishna mantra. And upon second initiation, we get the Diksha mantras, the Gayatri mantras. He wants to have attachment for these mantras. For the holy names of Sri Hari, for the most beloved eternal associates of the Lord, like in Vrindavan, we have the gopis, the gopas, and then in Navadvip, we have, you know, the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like Advaita Acharya, Lord Nityananda, Gadadhar Pandit. He wants to have attachment for those eternal associates. For the sacred days of celebrations throughout the year, such as Sri Ekadashi, Sri Janmashtami, and the appearance and disappearance days of the great Vaishnava Acharyas. Today's one such day. For the Lord's dearmost devotees who strictly follow in the sacred footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. So he wants to have attachment for the contemporary Vaishnavas also, not just those who lived hundreds of years ago, but even the ones who live today. And for the holy scriptures narrated by Srila Shukadev Goswami, such as the Srimad Bhagavatam, and others. We'll read one more. There's 12. Let's see. They're all so beautiful. I mean, really, they're so nice. Okay, we'll read the seventh verse. This is the seventh instruction to himself. I have no attraction for living in Vaikuntha, that part of the spiritual sky presided over by Sri Sri Lakshmi and Narayan, nor do I desire useless activities of gross sense gratification in this material world. That's a bold statement if you think about it. I mean, I know for myself, I couldn't say that. I couldn't say that I have no desire for sense gratification in this material world. I mean, just even thinking that, I laugh. I'm like, psh, you know. Yesterday we were working really hard at our house. We're starting a preaching center. And at the end of the day, we were just so tired. And I kept telling the boys, I said, let's go get some ice cream. Let's go get some ice cream. Let's go get some ice cream. You know, it was just the desire kept coming up. Let's go get some ice cream. Let's go get some ice cream. You know, after a hard day of serving, you feel like, okay, now my reward is a little sense gratification. You know, I did a full day of service. I deserve some ice cream. You know? So I can't even imagine saying such a thing. I don't desire sense gratification in this material world. I will never cherish the desire for attaining the divine bliss of impersonalistic liberation, even for a second. No desire to become liberated, even for a second. Furthermore, there are many transcendental pastimes of Sri Hari that may be very purifying for all conditioned souls. Yet, such pastimes will never ever give me any real happiness at all. That's an interesting statement. Why does he say that? There are many pastimes of the Lord that are purifying for everyone, but they offer me no happiness whatsoever. Why does he say that? This is because such pastimes are quite different from the blissful ecstasies of Braja consciousness being completely devoid of any relationship with Sri Radhika, who is the one and only fountainhead of pure joy. In other words, he's saying that the pastimes of Krishna that are very purifying for everyone, right? Like maybe the creation of the universe or the pastimes of Narayan or other such pastimes, they're very good, they're very purifying. They'll bring me no happiness. I just want to hear the pastimes of Radha and Krishna together. So a very elevated state of consciousness. For us, this doesn't so much apply to us. We're the conditioned souls who need to hear everything about the Lord. Ramayan, Narayan Leela, Vaikuntha Leela, killing the demons, all of that, creation of the universe. We need it. We shouldn't think that we're so elevated that we can just hear the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. We need to hear everything because we're the ones who need to be purified. But when we become purified and have a certain taste in Krishna consciousness, then we may someday, by the mercy of Guru, the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, may we also someday have such an aspiration that we just want to hear about Vrindavan and Radha and Krishna and these very elevated topics. So like that, that was just some glorification of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And now it's 8:18, so there goes my plans of reading Dana Keli Chintamani. But it's a beautiful book, and maybe if I give class again next week, I can just do the reading. But it was nice. We glorified Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which is very important on a day like today. Should we take one or two reflections? And then maybe I should do a little bit of reading. Do people want to hear this pastime? Yes? No? Yes? Anybody else? Would you guys like to hear? Or should we? Anybody have a reflection before I share the pastime? Any reflection? Okay, Daniel. Give me a chance to drink some water, too. Thank you. Is it okay if I play a little background music while I read this pastime? But let's keep our reflections really short so that we have at least 10 minutes of hearing Krishna Leela.
Super short appreciation. But I always love hearing the life and the pastimes of contemporary acharyas, because I feel like that's probably where I get like most of my, or a big chunk of my faith, like what really reinforces it.
Yeah.
I don't know about anybody else, but I find that that's the case with me when I hear like their convictions and their devotion and stuff. Because there can be sometimes like, you know, the mind can speculate so much and, you know, there's so many like opposing contradictions that, you know, come up in the world, and you hear like one thing, you hear another thing, or even in you know, different Vaishnav sampradayas, you know, there's all these subtle differences in approaches to Krishna. So I sometimes like wonder like, why specifically do we believe what we believe and everything? But then when I hear about just like the elevated position and just the sheer intellect of these people, like even like the six Goswamis of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, it really helps to reinforce my faith just hearing those things. So
yeah, so much work has gone into protecting our spiritual legacy from misconceptions. And the acharyas gave us so much to be able to, like, I have to deal with this quite regularly, devotees coming at me with all kinds of strange philosophies that they encounter, and they're wondering, like, should I believe this? Like, you know, most recently one devotee was getting really confused because he thought only a brahmana can be a guru. You have to be born a brahmin to be guru, you know, very heavy on this. So like there's so many misconceptions, but you know, thankfully, thanks to our acharyas, we have the ammunition to fight these misconceptions. And at least we may not be able to convince them, but if we're convinced, at least our faith is protected and we can do our best to convince others, but that's not up to us, right? That's between them and Krishna. But at least we have the ammunition from the acharyas to like say, no, the acharyas say like this, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes like this, so how can you make this statement? It's not supported by the acharyas, you know, like that. So it's very, I think that's a very nice reflection. Jai Bali, short, yeah? Because we want to save some time for reading.
Hare Krishna. Today is
Ayo.
the appearance of Bhaktivinoda Thakura Prabhu.
Exactly.
Today is also the appearance of another great Vaishnava, Harishan
Oh, come on, that's embarrassing.
Prabhu. So that's ironic. You normally give on Monday, Bhagavatam on Monday or Tuesday, but
Yeah.
Krishna wanted to give on your birthday and Bhaktivinoda, so that's very auspicious.
Thank you. I
So happy
appreciate it. Thank
birthday.
you. Thank you so much.
Nice class. And your point regarding the British wanting to decrease the faith of the people of India, their faith in Krishna consciousness or Hinduism.
Yeah.
So my comment, short question is regarding that there's a nice quote that says that whatever a person is most devoted to,
Yeah.
that's his religion. And our religion can be anything, like you said, sense gratification. However, one of my favorite pastimes regarding faith, anyone could be a humble devotee when you're honored. But try being a humble devotee when you're dishonored. I've converted to Vaishnavism, but if you make me mad, I'm going to convert to kicking your butt. And we see that in the pastime, chapter 89 of Krishna book. Bhriga Muni wanted to test, paraphrasing or this pastime, he wanted to test who's the greatest Vaishnava. Is it Brahma, Shiva, or Vishnu? So he dishonored Brahma, and Brahma became furious. He dishonored Shiva. Shiva became furious. He dishonored Vishnu, and Vishnu started glorifying Bhriga Muni. He says, yes, you're the most devoted to humility because your happiness is dependent on how people treat you. And the last point is that one thing that develops my faith in Krishna consciousness, though some things I keep in mind, it was a point I made yesterday, is that it's very easy to develop faith with circumstances or things that arouse your senses. Basically, if we watch movies, we read Facebook. On Facebook and social media, there's so much disrespect, so much criticism, so much negative things that basically we're conditioned to respond in that way, even if we read the Bhagavatam. And so we see what's the ratio. If I'm reading Bhagavatam once a week and I'm hearing Facebook, Twitter, all these negative things and watching movies during the rest of the week, and we see in this pastime, Shiva wanted to kill Bhriga Muni and so did Brahma. And so there's a quote by Buddha, maybe you could expand on this. This is the last quote. He says a very nice thing. He says, especially regarding to religionists, he says, let no man think lightly of evil, saying in his heart, it will not come upon me. Even by the falling of water drops, a water pot is filled. The fool becomes full of evil, even if he gathered little by little through Facebook, Twitter, movies, etc. So, what
That's
are some
cool.
steps we could do to develop this faith in things that don't arouse our senses, like Krishna consciousness?
I have the perfect solution. We can hear about Krishna's pastimes to arouse that faith. Let me get that mic though, because I need it to play my music. Okay, so I hope I have your attention. Turn this on. Okay, let's hope it's not too loud. It's not too loud on your end. It's really loud on over here. Just turn it down a little bit for myself. Okay. So this is how we develop taste in these high principles or real spiritual life. We have to hear about Krishna's pastimes. So this is Dana Keli Chintamani by Srila Raghunath Das Goswami. He writes, "May Sri Sri Gandharva Giridhari intently playful quarrel over a toll of milk products at the base of Govardhan Hill, where their friends, filled with hundreds of desires for their friend's victory, spoke many clever, crooked words, protect you all." So he opens with a blessing that may these narrations protect us. "Although I am blind by the power of the effulgence of the pollen of Srila Rupa Goswami's splendid lotus feet, I now take the eternally new Dana Keli pastime jewel created by the meeting of the flowing stream of Sri Radha and the ocean of Lord Giridhari, both very beautiful and both filled with nectar waves of exalted joking words. All glories to Saharagram, the residence of Upananda, the brother and intelligent minister of Gokul's king. Upananda's handsome and virtuous son is Subhadra, and Subhadra's highly qualified wife is Kundalata. So there's a reason why Upananda is introduced, because a member of his family is going to ask the opening question that initiates this pastime. Near Subhadra's house is a splendid aromatic garden filled with many flowers, bees, birds, and splendid trees. As she played in that garden, Kundalata asked her friend Sumukhi, "Where are Radha and Krishna now? What are they doing?" When she drank the stream of these Madhavika nectar words flowing from the lotus flower of Kundalata's mouth and sweetened with the camphor of questions about Sri Sri Radha Giridhari, eager, beautiful Sumukhi, filled with ecstasy and the hairs on her body upright, she began to tell the news of their pastimes. So now begins the pastime. It's a conversation between Sumukhi and Kundalata. Affectionately attached to Balaram, his own son, and Krishna, his friend's son, Maharaj Vasudev arranged that Bhaguri Muni perform a Vedic sacrifice for their benefit. Just like sometimes when the ladies get pregnant, they'll have a sacrifice for the protection of their unborn child. In the same way, Maharaj Vasudev had a desire to do something to protect Balaram and Krishna. Accompanied by many sages, Bhaguri Muni lovingly performed that sacrifice at Govinda Kund with great secrecy. Why secrecy? This will be explained later. The pure-hearted gopis quickly arrived at that sacrificial arena, and taking the milk products they carried on their heads, offered them to the sages. The sages were very pleased, and in reciprocation at once blessed them and gave them many gifts of jewel ornaments, in this way fulfilling all their desires. When staying at our own lake, Radhakund, where the glistening pure waters are filled with blossoming lotuses and lilies, and where all around are groves of many kinds of trees, beautiful with many flowers filled with humming bees, she heard from the mouth of the parrot Sukshamadi about the secret yajna. Radha became agitated at heart and longing to go there with her dear gopi friends, bathed, decorated herself with nice garments and ornaments, anointed herself with kumkum and the ointment of Krishna Pranaya. With great purity, worshipped the sun god, passionately meditated on Krishna as the moon of Braja shining in the sky of her heart. That's beautiful. So before she went to this yajna, Radharani meditated on Krishna as the moon of Braj shining in the sky of her heart. Isn't that beautiful? We can all visualize this. We have a heart and it's big like the sky, and we can meditate that, oh, Krishna is shining within my heart like a moon shines in the sky. A golden jar of aromatic ghee on her head, Radhika jubilantly left her lake to attend the yajna. Oh, girl with beautiful teeth, walking on the pathways, smiling and smiling as Radha tells the news of Krishna to her friends, a puppet in love's hands, suffering from not seeing her lover and glancing again and again at affectionate Lalita and witty Vishakha, Radha enjoys speaking crooked, joking words to her heart's content. This is a description of Radharani as she walked towards the yajna. She saw the regal mountain, proud of the touch of Lord Giridhari's hand. What is that regal mountain? Anybody knows? What mountain is proud of the touch of Giridhari's hands? Govardhan, exactly. She saw Govardhan, where are many trees with branches filled with splendid aromatic flowers, making wandering bumblebees mad with the sweet taste of their pollen. Many excellent fruits, roots, bulbs, luxuriant grasses, deer, sweetly singing birds, and many other creatures, and where in many places are jewel thrones, and in other places splendid mountain peaks, flowing mountain streams, and charming caves. Approaching Govardhan Hill, joyfully smelling the sweet aroma of ghee, the great sages continually poured into the sacred fires, and by the nectar of the happiness made eager to go quickly to the sacrifice, she rebuked the heavy breasts and hips that forced her to move slowly. So Radharani was so eager to get there as quickly as possible that anything that slowed her down, she became upset at, you know, like that. Learning of the gopis' imminent arrival from the parrot king, because you see, parrots in Braj are like spies. They're like the original cell phones. So they travel all over Vrindavan spreading news. So, you know, the parrots already went and told Krishna that, look, Radha, with very fine ghee, is now on her way to the sacrifice. So learning of the gopis' imminent arrival from the parrot king, Krishna smiled, assembled his dear friends, and made a makeshift toll booth from a black bench on Govardhan Hill. When Krishna saw smiling Radha, who wore a red sari and ornaments, and carried on her head a golden pot of ghee, as she walked with the gracefulness of a regal swan in the company of her gopi friends, who also carried pots of ghee, Krishna, the prince of the gopas, said, I know it's now 8:32. If anybody has to leave, please head out. I just want to get to the point when they start talking to each other, because it's really sweet. So I'll just read a little bit more, but if people have to go for service. So this is what Krishna says when he sees Radha carrying the ghee. He says, a full moon comes before me and turns my eyes into two chakora birds that live by drinking its moonbeams. It's very poetic. So Krishna's eyes have become chakora birds, and that which stands before him, Radha, has become the full moon. And so just like the chakora bird lives on moonlight, Krishna's eyes are living on the sight of Radha. That's what he's saying. In this moon are two splendid bandhuka flowers disguised as lips. So the moon has two flowers that are the lips of Srimati Radharani, but they remind him of these two beautiful flowers. These two flowers have turned my eyes into two bumblebees eager to drink its honey. And then he carries on. Who is this wonderful lotus flower that has appeared before me? This lotus flower has transformed me into a swan that passionately yearns to play among its petals. So poetic, see, this is such a beautiful way to describe his feelings of wanting to be with Srimati Radharani. When lotus petal-eyed Sri Krishna came to understand that the being before him was not a lotus flower, but a beautiful young girl, his heart became agitated with love for her. Filled with longing to attain her and uncertain whether he could attain her, he again spoke, is this a blossoming champaka vine? No, champaka vines are stationary and this being seems to move. Is this a lightning flash? No, lightning shines only for a moment in its sky-born cloud, and this being remains continually before me, right? Because lightning comes and goes, isn't it? But this being doesn't seem to go. It seems to stay. Is this a river with splendid waves? No, for rivers are formless and this being has a very beautiful form. As Srimati Radharani and her friends heard these words, they approached nearer to Lord Krishna. I cannot believe that this is the girl Radha with her many friends. As I reflect on the identity of this person, this is Krishna's thoughts, I can only conclude that this must be the beautiful, supreme goddess of love who has now appeared before me accompanied by her various potencies such as embracing, which have assumed the forms of these young girls. The fair complexioned girl is a splendid pennant of fame decorating Maharaj Vrishabhanu's dynasty. That's her father. A wave of glistening splendor from the jewel mind of Kirtida Devi's womb. This is Sri Dama's beautiful and pious younger sister, a flood of glittering moonlight that delights the lotus flowers of her dearest friends. And now listen to this next line. It is so poetic. And a charming roof under which the great peacock of my life's breath resides. See, my Guru Maharaj always says, when you read about the passions of Radha and Krishna, you see what is true love. And then you can understand that what boys and girls do in this world is just like so dead. It's such a perverted reflection of true love, right? Look at what she says. Look at what Krishna says. She's a charming roof under which the great peacock of my life's breath resides. This is Sri Radhika herself. In other words, Radharani is she who shelters the life of Krishna, the life breath of Krishna, right? Because you need breathing to live. So the whole world wants to worship God, Prabhupada says, but Krishna wants to worship somebody himself, and that's Srimati Radharani. The corners of her beautiful, restless eyes gazing at Lord Govinda, the crest jewel of Govardhan Hill, Tunga Vidya Devi smiled and said, Radha, this is your dear friend Krishna, who has now climbed to the summit of Govardhan, the king of mountains. This is the same passionate Krishna who hid in the darkness and stole the jar of yogurt. This is the great thief of the gopi's property. Lord Keshava was so handsome that his bodily luster completely defeated the great pride of the dark monsoon clouds. He was like Kamadev's club. Kamadev is Cupid, carries a club to bewilder people, raised to smash the advancing armies of the gopis' peaceful composure. Right? So the gopis' peaceful state of mind is compared to an army, and it's slowly moving towards the fire sacrifice, and here comes the club of Cupid to smash that peaceful composure. Why? Because he agitated their hearts with loving feelings. He was like a splendid decoration on the silk turban crown of Govardhan, the king of mountains. Radha embraced him with a crooked, sidelong glance. She wavered with unsteadiness as she spoke the following words. So let's hear now. We've heard how Krishna reacted to seeing Srimati Radharani. Now let us hear how Radharani reacted when she saw Krishna. My dear, beautiful faced friends, what is this before us? Is it a fresh monsoon cloud? Is it a sapphire blossom? Is it a newly sprouted blue lotus flower? Is it the amorous sporting of musk perfume? Oh, it is none of these, because this form before us causes me to burn with passionate desires. I know this must be that wonderful dark moon of Gokul standing before us on Govardhan Hill. But no, this cannot be the dark moon, for even the full moon and all the stars are not as splendidly beautiful as this. So first she thinks it's the moon, but then she realizes that even all the stars and the moon combined cannot be as beautiful as this sight. I think this must be smiling King Kamadev, accompanied by his friends, the cuckoo, the bumblebee, the spring season, and mangoes. I don't know why mangoes, but okay. My friends, I think King Kamadev has come here just to meet you. This is the playful object of maternal love for Braj's queen. So it's amazing how both of them appreciate the other people in their life, right? So Krishna is appreciating how Radha is the life of King Vrishabhanu and her mother. And Radharani is able to appreciate how Krishna is the life of his mother and all his friends. This is the nectarian fruit of the saintly tree of the cowherd's king. This is the sole medicine for protecting the dear cowherd boys. This is Madhava, the great ocean where Balaram's life breath performs pastimes. Overwhelmed with passion, Radha stared at Lord Giridhari. Her body became bathed with tears and perspiration. Oh, my friend Sudati, she trembled and only with great difficulty was able to keep the glistening pot of ghee from slipping out of her lotus hand. Sri Krishna was dressed in the most charming and elegant garments and ornaments as befitting the wealthiest of toll collectors. And Krishna played the part really well. He said, I'm going to be a toll collector. I'm going to dress the part. He carried a flute and buffalo horn bugle and was accompanied by many cowherd boyfriends holding sticks in the role of toll collectors. Smiling with contempt, the gopis stared at Krishna. They gracefully approached him. Seeing the sweet-hearted, charming gopis mad with anger, Madhu Mangal smiled and angrily spoke the following words to Krishna. This is Madhu Mangal coming in with some jokes. intoxicated by youthfulness and accompanied by her maddened friends, proud Radha, although only a weak woman, now approaches you. Oh friend, why do you not forcibly check her before she places her hands upon you? As he gracefully walked, Sri Krishna moved the bells on his body, making a tinkling sound filled with all amorous potencies and fully able to defeat the approaching lion of Sri Radha. As he bewildered her with these amorous potencies, he spoke to his Gopa associates the following words of pretended anger. So this is Krishna speaking now to the Gopas, pretending to be angry. Krishna says, Madhu Mangal speaks the truth. These wicked girls are ignoring my toll and proudly going away. Just see their arrogance. My friends, I will now single-handedly force them to pay the toll. Sound the flutes and buffalo horn bugles. Stop these girls. With my own arms, I will personally stop Radha, the leader of these crooked-hearted girls. Subal, O leader of thousands of toll collectors, you forcibly stop Vishakha. O Ujvala, O protector of the toll booth, O my friend, you stop Chitra Devi. O Vasanta, leader of the assembly, you stop Champakalata and Tungavidya. O Kukila, O most expert leader of thousands of guides, you stop Lalita. So he's sending each of his friends in different angles. You go there, you stop her, and I will stop Radha. You know, so that's his personal desire. Speaking many arrogant words, the cowherd boys surrounded Radha and her friends and stopped them from proceeding. Radha jubilantly assailed Krishna with many crooked words, that which were actually disguised prayers of glorification. Krishna appeared to become angry and he said to proud Radha, my dear proud thief, I know that you regularly travel in these great forest pathways, carefully hiding these milk products and lucratively selling them in the black market. By good fortune, you have now fallen into my hands. I will now arrest you, bind you with ropes, and take you before King Cupid. He will certainly be pleased with me for bringing you, and he will reward me by giving me the precious jewel of your youthfulness. Should I actually bring you insignificant girls before the great King Cupid? No, I should not bother him with your tiny antics. Instead, I will simply teach you that I am the unrivaled monarch of this town of Braj. My dear thief, he's talking to the gopis like this, if you do not immediately pay this toll, I will bind you with this garland of forest flowers. And then he goes on to describe the many things he will do. It's a little intimate, so I don't want to, it's a large open assembly and there's a lot of people here. Anyways, this is a good point to stop, but you get a sense of how the pastime kind of develops and grows. So, sorry that we went a little over time, but I hope the reading was inspiring. And in the purport, it mentions how, Krishna and the coward friends and the gopis would have these pastimes. They would steal butter, yogurt, milk, and interact with each other in a loving way. So I thought just to get a little, but it's very beautiful. On your own reading, you can read this. It's you can just find the PDF online. It's very simple. But when you read the dialogue between Krishna and the gopis, the banter, it's really funny. You know, Madhu Mangal steps in and says this, and Lalita is like, how dare you? You know, there is no such a thing as a toll collector. We've never seen such a thing before. We've walked this path thousands of times. Since when did you manifest? You know, Madhu Mangal is like, we have been here for a long time. You know, since when did you start using this path? Like this, they go back and forth. And then there's this huge fight that breaks out. So very, very playful and joyful. And then in another place, Shivaram Maharaj in his book, Navarbraja Mahima, then describes the sequel to this pastime where at one point, Krishna, the gopis, they ambush Krishna and the cowherd boys when it's just a few of them and kind of beat them up and tie up Krishna to a tree with flower garlands and make him apologize and beg forgiveness and say things like, you know, Radha, you're my mistress and I'm your lowly servant. And Krishna very humbly says these things. It's a very beautiful pastime. So this is how the gopis get revenge back, you know. So anyways, we'll end here. All glories to the Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to all of you.